Welcome to Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 2, entitled Internet and the World Wide Web. You may wonder why this material needs to be covered, as it seems to be ubiquitous. The Internet and the World Wide Web are known by everybody, it seems. And yet, many people do not understand its implication, its origins, how to use it, its advantages and disadvantages. These are the topics that we will cover in this unit. The objectives for this unit include gaining the abilities to define the Internet and the World Wide Web, understanding how to connect to the Internet with various options available through your ISPs, including IP addressing, DNS, domain names, and fees associated with Internet access, searching the Internet, filtering results, and evaluating credibility of results, Internet security and privacy concerns, ethical considerations through the use of the Internet, and finally, online healthcare applications and the associated security and privacy issues. This will also include a small discussion about HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Let's begin our discussion by defining the Internet. According to Wikipedia, the Internet is a global system of interconnected computer networks that use the standard Internet Protocol Suite, which is TCP/IP, or Transmission Control Protocol Internet Protocol, to serve billions of users worldwide. The hardware that makes up the Internet is called cabling. Cabling connects your ISP to your home. Cabling also connects your ISP to other ISPs throughout the U.S. It is the cabling, routers, switches, servers, and computers that host documents, audio, video, and more. In other words, the content of the Internet. The Internet is a large network made up of many smaller networks. For example, your city may connect to other cities, and that creates your region. Your region might connect to another region. For example, the Western United States may connect to the Midwestern portion of the United States. Computers connect to the Internet via an Internet Service Provider, or ISP, such as AT&T, Bell South, Quest, or Verizon. Examine the graphic on this slide. This is a visualization of the various routes through a small portion of the Internet. What appear to be hubs, or large pieces of light with spokes extending out of them, represent the cabling and interconnections. This gives you an idea of what the Internet would look like. For some, it would seem that the Internet has been around forever, but really, that is not the case. The Internet has its roots in the United States government's desire to still be able to communicate, even in the event of a nuclear strike. This network was named ARPANET, or Advanced Research Projects Agency Network. The original Internet consisted of four computers or servers operating at UCLA, the University of California, Santa Barbara, Stanford, and the University of Utah in 1969, which is the same year that the U.S. put a man on the moon. The world quickly saw the benefits of an Internet, and it continued to grow, especially from the mid-90s through the current time. In 1995, for example, it is estimated that 16 million people were using the Internet. Today, it is estimated that more than 1.8 billion people use the Internet. Many people think that the Internet and the World Wide Web are the same thing, but they are not. According to Wikipedia, the web is one of the services that runs on the Internet. It is a collection of interconnected documents and other resources linked by hyperlinks and URLs. A URL, which is a Uniform Resource Locator, is an address that you type into your browser's address line, such as www.whitehouse.gov. The World Wide Web is often referred to as simply the Web. Who created the World Wide Web? In general, British scientist Tim Berners-Lee is credited with creating the web in 1989 by introducing a web browser and web page coding. This slide shows a picture of Dr. Berners-Lee in approximately November 2005. An interesting historical side note related to former Vice President Al Gore, is that many people took offense at a comment he made when he said that he took the initiative in creating the Internet. This was misquoted by comedians and even the media, much to his detriment. For more information on that event, look at this slide as well as the Wikipedia link. As I mentioned on the previous slides, Dr. Berners-Lee created the web by introducing a web browser and web page coding. A browser is a software program that lets the user, you and me, interact with the web by facilitating connection to other web servers through the Internet. Browsers. Examples of browsers include Internet Explorer, Mozilla, and Firefox. Use HTTP, which is the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, to communicate with web servers to get web page content. The web server sends HTML coding back to the browser, which translates the HTML coding for display on a monitor. HTML is the hypertext markup language. On the previous slide, we said that the web server sends HTML coding back to your browser, which translates that to HTML coding for display on your monitor. Therefore, HTML is the language of the web. Web pages are text files written in the HTML programming language. An example of HTML is shown in the figure on the left side of this slide. Notice the HTML word enclosed in brackets. This is the HTML code that would output the web page that you see on the right side of the slide. You can enter the code shown in the HTML code section in a notepad document, and then save that document with the file name of page.htm or page.html. Then, double-click the file. Your browser will open the file and show you the output as you see it on the slide. The image on this slide shows the world's first web server. This Next computer was used by Sir Tim Berners-Lee at CERN. It became the world's first web server. CERN is a French acronym, which translated means the European Organization for Nuclear Research. The document resting on the keyboard, if you examine the image, is a copy of Information Management, which was Dr. Lee's original proposal for the World Wide Web. The label on the cube itself has the following text on it: "This machine is a server. Do not power it down." Just below the keyboard, not shown, is a label which reads, "At the end of the 80s, Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web using this Next computer as a first web server." The book is probably Inquire Within Upon Everything, which Dr. Lee describes on page 1 of his book, Weaving the Web, as a musty book of Victorian advice I noticed as a child in my parents' house outside London. This leads us to the question, who owns the web? The answer is that no entity owns the Internet, but people and organizations own the devices that connect to the Internet and form the World Wide Web. In fact, these people and organizations also own the content of the web. However, the Google versus China saga clearly illustrates how a country can repress what its citizens read. Included in the notes for this slide is a link to that ongoing discussion at Wikipedia's website. In order for the Internet and the World Wide Web to work together seamlessly, we need standardized communications. Internet protocols are a global standard, ensuring interoperability between hardware and software devices. In other words, a Macintosh computer can access the Internet just like a Microsoft-based PC can. Protocols such as HTTP allow any browser to talk to any web server. TCP/IP transports HTTP across the Internet for delivery to its destination. Let's discuss Internet addressing basics to help you become familiar with Internet Protocol, or IP. All Internet communication utilizes IP addressing. In other words, when a computer accesses the Internet, it must have an IP address. The Internet expects each communicating device, known as a host, to possess an IP address and subnet mask, which is a group of numbers that are in the format of 192.168.10.1, with a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0. Please examine the slide notes for more information. When we examine this IP address, we learn that the host is in the 192.168.10.something network. This network can legally have addresses in the range of 192.168.10.1 through and including 192.168.10.254. Networking devices and software on computers use 192.168.10.0 through with 192.168.10.255 for routing and communication with computers and devices that are within that network. You probably realize that valid numbers for IP addresses are in the range of 0 to 255. Now that we basically understand what an IP address is, the next question should be, how do we obtain one? Some IP addresses can be purchased or leased and used by the owner of that IP address or IP address range. These are referred to as public IP addresses. Most IP addresses are public IP addresses. Other IP addresses can be used by anyone. However, these addresses are not recognized on the internet. In other words, they are valid within your home or within a place of business. These are referred to as private IP addresses. Examples include addresses in the range of 10.0.0.0, 172.16.31.0, and the familiar 192.168.0.0. Note that this is merely the beginning range of private IP addresses. We are not covering subnet masking or going into further detail about IP addressing here, as the depth of IP addressing is beyond the scope of this unit. Unless you plan to be a server administrator or a router or switch technician, you will not need to be knowledgeable about IP addressing to that level. Fortunately, the internet supports the use of domain names. Imagine attempting to navigate the World Wide Web and the internet using IP addresses as opposed to names. Since people remember names better than numbers, the Domain Naming System, or DNS, was created. DNS and IP work well together. DNS, which again is the Domain Naming System, maps an IP address to what is referred to as a domain name. When you visit the website www.whitehouse.gov, your computer must first figure out this website's IP address. In other words, when you type www.whitehouse.gov into your browser has to use DNS to resolve that name through an IP address. One IP address for the White House is 65.126.84.121. The website www.whitehouse.gov is probably associated with many IP addresses because of the many hosts that access that website at any given moment. Domain name resolution is accomplished through the use of DNS servers, which are located throughout the world. All domain names are mapped to an IP address and stored on globally and privately owned DNS servers, as mentioned previously. Global DNS servers are known as root servers and work together to map the global names to their IP addresses. Keep in mind that only one device may use an IP address at any given time, and that a domain name may only be used by one entity. When your browser receives the destination site's IP address from the DNS server, your browser can then begin to communicate with the destination device. People and organizations can purchase a domain name from ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Their website is listed in the slide notes. According to Wikipedia, a domain name is an identification label that defines a realm of administrative autonomy, authority, or control on the Internet, based on the domain name system. As you probably are aware, domain names are made up of three distinct pieces, combined into one. For example, the domain name www.whitehouse.gov includes a government site with the purchased domain name of White House, which is found on the World Wide Web. Let's now turn our attention to how we connect to the Internet. Devices commonly connect to the Internet by dial-up, broadband, Wi-Fi, satellite, and 3G connections. Dial-up connections are built with copper phone lines, which connect to an ISP's modem. The modem connects to your computer, for example, and then it connects to an outlet on the wall, which connects to wiring that leads ultimately to the ISP's modem. These connections are limited to speeds of 56 kilobits per second, which is very slow. Broadband uses higher quality copper phone lines, also known as coax cable or fiber optic connection cables. Broadband is faster than dial-up and provides speeds of 768 kilobits per second and higher. Today, most of us are familiar with connecting to the Internet wirelessly. Wi-Fi is a wireless technology with a radio frequency connection type. Wi-Fi refers to the IEEE, which is the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, 802.11 standard governing wireless technologies. Typically, Wi-Fi and wireless connection types are used to connect laptops to wireless access points or WAPs. The WAP is connected to the wired network to gain access to the Internet. For example, your home setup may consist of a wireless router connected to your ISP's device, with your laptops operating wirelessly in the house. Your laptops connect to the wireless router, which connects to the ISP's device. Ultimately, that device connects to the Internet. Wireless is used extensively by hotels and airports and schools. Wireless speeds range from a slow 1 megabyte per second to over 200 megabytes per second with the new NDRAFT standard. And this depends on a variety of factors such as weather, interference for the signal, and so on. If you connect to the Internet via satellite, the connection is to a ground satellite dish or antenna that relays signals to a satellite orbiting the Earth. The orbiting satellite relays the signal to another ground satellite dish. This type of connection can be somewhat slow because of the time it takes to make a whole round trip. The loss of speed is known in networking terms as latency. Finally, we have 3G connections. These are the standards governing global communications. For example, the smart devices many people are using today use 3G standards. Rates of speed range from 2 megabytes per second and 5 megabytes per second, depending on your plan and the location of the device.